Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Hard Truth. Hi, Alana.
Hi, David. I keep marveling at that music. Who composed that? My husband. And played it. Isn't that beautiful?
It always sets the show off to the best possible.
Yeah, the music keeps its, age as well. The husband?
Yeah, well, okay. The music's also got a bit of an edge to it, and so is this show. So it's a good, it's literally a good marriage in so many ways. So, Alana, we have our special guest, who'll be coming on in a second. But look, before we get to that, we need to talk about monkeypox, because who knew? Well, we've got this new most deadly potential pandemic spreading around the world. And I wonder what's your thoughts on monkeypox?
Well, David, I hope you're not up to any monkey business. I don't think so. But if you avoid biblically prohibited copulation, you should be fine.
Yeah, I know. It's so ridiculous.
You know, the other thing that I think is also quite serious and definitely a death penalty offense is animal abuse. And we are definitely increasingly importing that.
I mean, to put the whole monkeypox thing in perspective, I wanted to stick up a couple of memes on the screen, because memes can say a lot. So if we can just bring these up right now. Here we have two different ways of looking at this. Here's monkeypox just looking around the corner saying, when's the midterms? And then look, there's Dr. Fauci. With coronavirus in one hand, but he's looking enviously at monkeypox.
Yeah, and it's apropos, because we are going to, they definitely, you know, there's nothing, in case our viewers are wondering, there's nothing to worry about. If you're not into monkey business, you have nothing to worry about. But definitely the powers are looking to lock down and to sort of escalate this. And this is a good time to bring in our guest from... we're continuing the discussion about the ineptness of the GOP with Jack Kerouac.
Yes, indeed. So, welcome, Jack.
Hello, thank you.
Hi, Jack. Okay, let me introduce you, or is it David going to do the honors? Jack, we introduced you last week. I think we had about over 7,000 views on that tape, yes, and but not 7,000 subscribers. So, please, guys, do subscribe if you support our work here. Jack is a philosophy professor from New Jersey. He writes prolifically on conservative sites like American Greatness. Town Hall hasn't featured us lately, has it? Town Hall, me too. Love the people there, but I haven't had a column in for a while. But I think you can't be too critical of the GOP, which you are. Jack's speciality is ethics and political philosophy, with an emphasis on classical conservatism, like the wonderful Edmund Burke and Kirk Russell. And that brings into sharp relief the sort of conservatism we have today. But Jack, I did want to refer to quotes that our friends Boyd Cathy and Clyde Wilson often bring up in their work, to Southern Patriots, and it's of Robert Louis Dabney. And he wrote about, in 1875, he wrote about the stupid party. This is a party which is quite prescient. I didn't think that anyone had those insights back then. He wrote, this is a party which never conserves anything. Its history has been that it demurs to each aggression of the Progressive Party and aims to save its credit by a respectable amount of growling, but always acquiesces at last in the innovation. What was the resisted novelty of yesterday is today one of the accepted principles of conservatism. Say you? So it's been going on for a while, hasn't it?
I guess the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, it sounds very topical, doesn't it? I mean, it's
I didn't know that he said these things in 1875, that the northern post-war northern conservatism was already failing. Well, the war between the states says it all, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So that doesn't surprise. No, I mean, I was going to say he's prophetic, but he was just characterizing the way conservatism had been up to that point. And I said, and more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to say, Alana, we forgot to say at the beginning.
Sorry, David, long COVID. My nose is running. Long COVID. Scientific statement.
just to say to people, by the way, that, of course, you can be watching this in Rumble, but we are also now, Hard Truth is now set up and are available on BitChute as well as on Odyssey. So we are now across three different video platforms of your preference. So should have just said that at the beginning, because as we expand our wings, Jack, we're trying to get out to through as many free speech platforms as we possibly can do.
That's just
FYI. Jack, I just one thing I wanted to ask, because if we just can we bring up Jack's article, which is got here. If voting Republican is the answer, why has it never worked before? Great question. And of course, rhetorical as well. Here's a different way of looking at it. Does voting Republican or does voting Democrat, does it work really well, Jack?
You know, if you ask your average Democrat, right, so maybe not your average Democrat, maybe if you ask your far left Democrat, such a person would say no. But as far as I'm concerned, to the extent that the Democrat Party is home to, you know, more left of center ideology, then insofar as the overall culture is to the left, then I'd say that it works well. Now I don't think your average Democrat is necessarily aware of all of the ideological implications of voting along those lines. No, I think your average person, whether Democrat or Republican, kind of votes more for psychological, sort of traditional reasons, not necessarily ideological ones. You know, but even talking about Republican, Democrat, you know, I'm using conventional language.
Yeah.
Because that's what people understand. But even speaking in those binary terms is itself sort of a function, I think, of the overall delusion under which American voters, both Democrats and Republicans, continue to operate.
Yeah, speak a bit to that matrix. You say the traditional GOP conservative MAGA voters have become hopelessly mired in a matrix designed by the GOP big conservative media access. For as understandably difficult as it is for voters to realize this, you write, once they zoom out and assume a meta perspective on the political situation, the truth becomes obvious. So how have Republicans, I thought you actually made the point that the liberals are winning, but what you're saying is they don't know they're winning because they're so greedy. But how have Republican voters been manipulated into what you depict as an unchanging reality?
Well, if you scroll down to the comments after my article, right, you know, some of the commenters get what I'm saying. The majority, it seems, even when they think they're agreeing with me, only reflect just how deeply ensconced within the matrix they remain. You know, they beg the question. They'll accuse someone like me of throwing in the towel. They'll accuse someone like me of giving up the fight, right? But they're begging off on the very question. They're assuming that voting Republican is a way of fighting. And I'm saying it's not.
Yeah. You pointed to another
point. It's not.
Actually, the confusing thing, Jack, is you're using beg the question correctly. It's a non sequitur.
Yes.
You know, they're assuming a premise that is just incorrect.
It's incorrect. That's why, you know, voting, that's the whole point of what I'm saying. You're not fighting when you're voting Republican. You're assuming from the jump that by voting Republican, you're somehow going to be pushing back against the excesses of the left. What we're saying is voting Republican has only proven to facilitate the leftward drift of the national dialogue of the country. So you're enriching incumbents, or you're helping newly elected politicians achieve their fortunes. You're stuffing the pockets of the big conservative media influencers with ratings. But ultimately, nothing is getting done.
But Jack, let me just put this point to you. Suppose nobody voted for the Republicans. So the Democrats would then control everything at every level. Do you think that would make for a better country?
No, I do not. Not in the short term, anyhow. Whether that would ultimately elicit more, a more powerful kind of backlash is another question. It might.
At what level, though? A political backlash or a backlash in a different way?
They're not mutually exclusive alternatives, right? Right now, I'm really thinking only in terms of a political backlash. Maybe if, Republicans realize that the base is genuinely sick of them, then that could help to, rejuvenate the Republican Party, or that could bring to rise a new kind of Republican Party. Not MAGA, so-called MAGA, but something that is committed to achieving real substantive and endurable changes. But David, let me just say this, though, because I understand exactly what you're asking. Is this not like chopping off your nose to spite your face? And I would say this. I, for one, am just tired of being part of this game. So, frankly, while I obviously want better for my country, I've long since decided that the only changes over which I have control are changes that I try to affect in my own personal life.
Yeah.
And so I think my energy is better spent doing that. I can't control what's going to happen in America, but I just don't want to feed into the farce anymore.
But aren't you making more of a theoretical point? Is there no, for instance, one of our... I think it was your reader or ours. Theoretical point of us being holier than thou, because you and I do tend to be theoretical. The Republicans suck. Oh, that's the next reductio, David. Oh, not this one. Yeah. Yep, the Republicans suck, but the Democrats want to kill me.
Yeah, I've seen that somewhere.
That's quite powerful. He's got a point. Do you maybe vote defensively, or do we just revel in our theoretical purity and sit on the fence?
Well, people, if you read some of the comments.
Some of them are good, Jack. Mm.
Yeah, some of them are good. But you often get this. You often get people say, you've identified the problem. What's the solution? Well, let's see. First of all, you have to acknowledge that there is a problem before you can move to the next step and propose a solution, right? It's like saying it's like a person asking how they can prevail over their alcoholism while not only thinking they don't have a problem with alcohol, but thinking there's something virtuous about the fact that they drink as much as they do, right? So let's first acknowledge what the real problem is. And it's not just that the Republicans don't deliver on their promises. It's that the Republicans implicitly, to their own admission, repeatedly acknowledge that they can't deliver on their own promises. That's the point I was trying to make in this article, that there is a performative contradiction that has persisted within the GOP. The GOP, the Republican politicians make promises, just elect us and we'll accomplish X, Y, and Z, right? Then once they get elected, there's some excuse for why they can't deliver on X, Y, and Z. It's that they don't have...
But that's fraud. I think they more than acknowledge that they can't. They don't acknowledge that. They defraud with each cycle. They defraud the vote.
Well, they defraud, right? But what they'll say is, okay, like now we got the House. Yeah, okay, that's a good start.
I like that paragraph in the column. Oh, we've got the House. We need the Senate. No, I love that.
Yeah, and now we need the presidency, that. Right? Oh, and then people will say, what's amazing is that all these people who are so revved up to have Trump run again in 2024, these are the same people who make excuses for him at every turn for his failure to deliver on certain goods in his first term. They'll say, well, he had too many powerful forces aligned against him. He was fighting both parties. There's this deep state infrastructure that was thwarting him on every turn. Okay, then why expect for things to be any different this time around?
But that's right? an important point in your column. I just wanted you to paraphrase it. We're assuming, that the viewer knows that. You said, well, we have the House. No, we can't do anything. We need the Senate. Then we have the House and the Senate. Oh, we can't do anything. We need the presidency.
Right. That was pretty good. And then once we have the presidency, we don't have then the media is hostile. The media lies about us.
There's always something.
Or the rhinos. Or there's so. But I'll just say, get back to David's question about solutions. Well, listen, okay, first of all, let's acknowledge the problem. Then as far as solutions, so-called solutions are concerned, there's certain stuff I can't put in print, all right, because, it won't get published anyhow. But I will say this, and I've written as much over the last so many years, what would the founders do, all right? Mm-hmm. When the founding generation of Americans felt that their rights were being intolerably violated, they sought to secede. They wanted to peacefully secede from England. England didn't want for them to do that. That in turn, so then they defended their rights through force. Logistically, something along those lines may not be feasible at this point. And I'm not, calling for any kind of action along those lines, but just staying the course that we've been on has surely proven to be untenable.
David, and this is the time to bring up that reader.
Let's just bring up this one, Jack. This was a comment that was left on our website, and you can read it for yourself there. It's self-evidently people are
why won't any of you just cut through all the theories and philosophies and admit that only armed revolution can change things and a brief controlled well, I don't like the reign of terror, but no. He's saying in essence when in the course of human events, right? Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration,
and Thomas Jefferson said that the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed every now and again, right? Yep. With the blood of patriots and tyrants. So, people who say, violence is never the answer, obviously, weren't reading the founders, nor have they been paying attention to, similar kinds of revolts throughout history. Now, again, I'm not calling for violence on this show.
And neither are we,
No, right. And I just want to, be clear about that.
Yeah, but the thing, there's a couple of things I wanted to bring in here because, Jack, I've read the article several times and I find myself conflicted because I agree with pretty much everything that you say, but I don't want to agree with some parts of it, right?
Yeah.
I suppose I spend a lot of my time talking to what you guys might call ultra MAGA type people. So not MAGA people now, people who are way beyond that. People who define themselves as ultra dark MAGA, people who are becoming more radicalized. Let's be honest, they're radicalized because they saw all the stuff that you've written about, Jack, and you as well, Alana. They've seen, what happened in from 2016 to 2020, and but these are good people. I talk to them a lot, and I know they're good. They're patriotic people. They believe in so much of what the founders believed in, I think. And they're desperate to find some way to change what is only all too evident, Jack, and which you've detailed. And it's correct what you're detailing. Mm. I just think, there's a logical point this comes to, and here's the question. The way this is going is you're not going to change things at the ballot box because essentially America is a broken system because you detail it and Alana details it. It's broken. I put it to you, it's a broken system. And that's what happens when empires start the slide into the abyss. So is that where we're going, into the abyss?
Yeah, and let me just say this too. The one commenter said that the Republicans suck, but the Democrats want to kill me.
Yes, will push, yeah.
And again, I'm no longer thinking explicitly along those lines of Republicans, Democrats. What we do know is that there is a more or less homogenized regime in America. Okay. Yeah. And I think it transcends Democrat, Republican.
Yeah.
It's a coalition, you know, an axis of evil, if you will, mm-hmm. of government, corporate media, you know, big tech, the entertainment industry, big academia. These are all the CDC, you know, the whole medical cartel. There is this regime, and there is an ideology that rationalizes the pursuits, the agenda of that regime. And this regime has set itself up over and above the people, which is why there are quite a few of us who feel as if we're dealing with that there's this adversarial relationship between the rulers, the elites, and the rest of us.
Yeah.
But let me put this to you, and a point of philosophy, I guess, about the nature of man. I mean, from the progressive perspective, people do things because of a confluence of societal factors, family, unjust structures, the state, etc. And that's their progressive social determinism. On the side of the libertarians, it's, oh, the state made him do that. Remove the state, you remove all the incentives for evil. But right. I'm wondering, is the government, does it reflect us in some way, even more so than reflect us? Is it us? Is it of us? Do you really see that larger demarcation between the people and the ruling class?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question. And in part, it sounds rhetorical to me, as it should, because I agree with you that there's a sense in which, you know, we, like I said, we get the government that we choose. But I think while that's true to some extent, it's not necessarily true in the sense in which it's easy for people to think it's true. What I mean is, I think the illusions with which not just Americans, but say, you know, Europeans have been living for the last couple centuries persist very deeply or very, you know, very thoroughly today. What are some of these illusions? Well, first of all, is the illusion of democratic rule. The idea that we are a self-governing people, you know, there's very much an Enlightenment ideal, mm-hmm. Sort of the offspring of Enlightenment, you know, liberal rationalism. The idea that people are free to vote. The idea that we are rational actors that can very objectively, impartially evaluate the alternatives proposed to us and then vote accordingly. That itself, I believe, is a fiction. And I'm not the first person to point this out. It was
how about Genesis? Genesis 8:21, thanks to my editors who helped me locate that, because I'm a Hebrew. I mean, it says there, the instinct of man is evil from his youth. That's why I ask you this question. It's not only that we get the government, we deserve it, reflects. And another reader, your reader, I think, said, what did he say? He said, actually, on your thread on the AG, on American greatness, said we are culturally rotten as a country, as a people, sick to the core, without shame, without humility, without prudence or common sense.
I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so we don't, you know, if there was really this autonomous, rational will that the classical democratic ideal implies, then that would be a different story. But that's not really what happens. You know, we're consumers, and the politicians, their media apologists, they are manipulative. And so, you know, the average person who's coming to the voting booth isn't fully informed. That person is acting upon what the person has received from the corporate media that in turn is connected with the very politicians who that person's being manipulated to vote for. So I think the very ideal is a fiction, and I think the social contract is too. So I'm saying so Americans, you know, Europeans, at least since the Enlightenment, maybe even a little longer, have taken as basic these ideas that are political fictions, and they kind of make the system work.
David, I want
you work in favor of those who benefit from it, is what I mean.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't mean to talk up. I just want to make sure everyone gets what I'm saying here.
You also last week made a point about I wanted David to touch on Musk, because David knows the status of the deal and why that's important, if it is at all.
Well, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you see, I think things in many regards are even worse, Jack, than even you pointed out in your article. So, for example, I think the US has now got a banana republic voting system. So even if it was on a more utopian basis, it didn't matter because it's arguably something that you'd expect literally in sub-Saharan Africa. That's what America's got. So therein lies a problem. But then the broader issue is perhaps going to Elon Musk. You know, maybe the discussion does have to go more broad and in different areas, because if you go straight through the normal political channels, I mean, there's people like us. We can sit around and talk all day till we're blue in the face. But we won't be given slots on Fox News, you know, or I won't be on the BBC or whatever. There's just no chance of that. So the debate, therefore, needs to take place in other platforms. Now, that's why I think what Musk is trying to kind of do, but I don't believe he'll succeed, but he's trying at least, and you've got to give him plaudits for that, is to try and make one of the biggest debating platforms and most socially significant platforms, Twitter, into somewhere like voices like the three of us could actually be. I mean, I, as you know, I'm banned from it. So, and I think in doing that, he arguably, and this is the point I think Alana and I talked about, he achieves more. And I think you put it in your column, you know, as well, Alana. In a way, Musk is achieving more than all the whining.
Well, that was Jack's point, and I wonder why you say that. What is the status of the purchase? And why do you think, other than the fact that he's the richest man in the world and has said a few things, he has tweaked the system, the circuit. Other than those things, why is what he's doing important?
You're asking me?
Yes, of course.
Okay. No, I think it. What Musk is doing is important insofar as, I mean, I was thinking if the purchase itself goes through, which I was assuming before it would, then that would potentially be more significant socially than anything that the big con has done over the span of last so many decades, because precisely for the reason that David just specified, that then voices that would otherwise be suppressed will finally be heard, right? I mean, think about it. You know, COVID, for example, just thousands and thousands of world-renowned, very distinguished, prominent researchers and scientists who were huge critics of the official narrative from the outset, but who have been suppressed. This could have changed the trajectory of things had they been permitted to be heard from the beginning.
Well, even as we talk and record this today, in Switzerland, at Davos, there is the World Economic Forum are holding their jamboree. And I see people reporting that on Twitter, if certain people literally repeat the words of some of those participants in the WEF forum, their accounts are being suspended. So you've got this massive, I think there's two, I mean, there's 2 billion alleged people on it. Let's assume maybe half of them are bots, but regardless, you know, And it is changing the social discourse, and it's supporting it massively, Jack, in a way that, to my mind, accelerates actually the decline and fall of Western civilization in the name of Silicon Valley tech.
Right. No, and that's why. That's why I think that if there's any hope at all of changing the direction of the culture, it has to be by way of assuming control of the media, not just creating an alternative media infrastructure like a lot of conservatives and others are doing right now, but assuming control of the big corporate media. I mean, you have to make sure that this stuff gets out there, and right now it's not even close to being out there.
Sorry, Alana, but just to finish on that one, how are you going to get control of CNN? All the that's not going to happen.
I'm not saying it is going to happen, which is why I'm not holding my breath for it. But what I am saying is that Elon Musk, can't be the only wealthy person who recognizes the danger that's being posed by those on the left or those who are within the regime, right? He was effortlessly able to call up a few of his buddies to help get the money for Twitter, right? Yeah. Surely they could do that with other media outlets.
Jack, these people are activists and social warriors first and business people second. You're talking wealth to the tune that we cannot even imagine. So there is no, I agree with you about Musk. There was an impetus there. There was a good instinct. He does have that. He said the right things in a halted sort of way. And he's not Trump, but he's not exactly eloquent. Right. However, these people don't need to do anything. They have the wealth of, the GDP of over some of the wealthiest countries, that's the extent of their wealth. So, I should say maybe four OECD countries, not the GDP of the wealthiest countries. But these are people that are social warriors first. And so I'm just wondering about the real bell curve of progressive ideation. Musk might be slightly tending towards classical liberalism, but for the rest, I don't see any sparks of life anywhere.
Mm. I don't either. But I don't know if that means that there aren't others out there that can at some point be brought around. Listen, I'm not saying that this is going to happen. I mean, I'm just putting it out there that there is no way you're going to be able to vote your way out of this, that if things are ever going to make a substantive, durable turn in the culture, this is how you're going to go about doing it. Again, whether it happens or not, I'm not holding my breath for any of it. I'm going to live my life. Yeah. But if you think that just by voting Republican, you're somehow going to, save the country from extinction or something like that, that's obviously not the case.
And actually, just on the back of that, to go back to the comment we mentioned earlier, Alana, the reader who said, I think the GOP suck, but the Dems want to kill us. No, that's wrong. The GOP want to kill you as well. Look at what's happening in Ukraine at the moment. I saw Mitch McConnell got his ass over to meet the renowned actor Zelensky. And the things that are happening there, and I saw Trump actually did make a reference to it today, that the inconceivable, a nuclear war, could actually happen. It's totally conceivable. Yeah. And the GOP, Jack, are up to their necks in it as much.
I think you're right.
To me, they're both going to kill us. Yeah. What do you say, Jack?
No, I agree. Yeah, I do. That's why I said people like, it's understandable why that commenter would say what he did. I get that. But I said at the beginning of this discussion, insofar as he's still thinking along the lines of Republican, not so bad, Democrats, terrible, he's still sort of, he's still within this matrix. They still think that the Republicans are somehow, somehow potentially saviors, and They're not. Like you said, they that's why I like to refer to it as this regime more than anything. Mm-hmm. And Republicans are of a piece with that regime as well.
Jack, we do have to give some space here to Tucker. I think he's one of the most important voices, whatever you think of him. And for example, yesterday, sometimes he truly has sparks of brilliance. I don't know if you agree. But yesterday, it was May 23rd, he said brilliantly, talked about the end of language. It was very philosophical. He said, what comes after? What's the reductio after you've used language to its absolute limits against your enemy, as the left has? I mean, what do you call people after you've exhausted terms like Nazi, us, white supremacist, us, terrorists in the making, us, traitors in the making? And he left it at that. He said the next level is the law. I thought that was brilliant. That was really profound. Then he brought on one of the Matrix, one of the commentators who's a very well-meaning, a religious gentleman called Jason Whitlock. What Jason Whitlock and what the Candace and what all the people of those ilk, Tucker knows what's potting, but what these people said, they said they came in with this pacifist, soft, flaccid GOP talk, and Jason said, yes, the Democrats are desperate. They have run out of rhetoric. The Democrats are escalating because they're desperate. Republicans to the rescue. But this is the discrepancy in the reality. They can't even see. Democrats are not desperate. They're winning.
Right.
And so they even frame reality incorrectly. What do you think about Tucker and that sort of discrepancy? I think he believes that. He believes he's winning.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Now, did Tucker...
Tucker was silent. Tucker knows what's potting. He formulated what I thought was quite brilliant. What happens when you reach the end of language against your enemies? You move into law. I thought that was really profound. I thought you'd agree that's profound.
He left that,
and he was looking for something from Jason Whitlock, who said, "Oh yeah, we are winning. They're desperate. This is rhetoric." The same thing that Candace Owens would say. And that's, it just occurred to me, they can't even define reality. No, the Democrats are winning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know there's a part of you that feels sorry for, you know, Republicans / conservatives who seem like they're true believers in this stuff. It seems like they are genuine. Another part of you almost feels a little envious. You kind of wish you were still that naive. Like David was saying before, there are things you agree with, you wish, but you don't like it. You wish you didn't agree with them, right?
Yeah.
Then there's another part that gets that makes you frustrated. See, because, you know, Candace Owens, Jason Whitlock, Tucker, all these other, you know, conservative sort of influencers, they are making quite a living doing what they're doing. Okay. And one reason, you know, for as bright as I think Tucker is, one reason I haven't watched Fox in the longest time. Sometimes I'll watch a couple of monologues from Tucker on YouTube, but one reason why I really don't like watching any of these guys is because it's usually the same standard operating procedure. You know, it's they are always identifying left-wing outrages. And there's a reason why I don't watch The View. There's a reason why I don't watch CNN, MSNBC. Yeah. I don't want to see or hear those people. So, and I don't want to see or hear them, whether they're on their own networks or whether they're being shown in clips on Fox and other places.
Yes.
So my question always is, okay, well, you're just preaching to the choir right now. You're not reaching anyone new. Even if you are picking up some viewers here or there, there's nothing substantive occurring there. You're making a lot of money for the sake, and you're making a lot of money by way of just stoking the flames of fear and anxiety amongst people who tune into you every night. I mean, to what avail are you doing all this other than to, you know, advance your own material interest? You're not reaching anyone new. That's not happening. right? So you're getting people, what, to get out there to the polls, to have them go vote Republican? And again, what is that going to accomplish? Even if it does arrest some of the ambitions of Democrats, these are only temporary measures.
Yeah.
So I just, that's why, you know, my answer actually is, you know, if you want a solution, my answer would be, you know, peaceable divorce, secession. Okay, well, I can't logistically, I don't know how that would flesh out. So I've more or less kind of seceded in my own life.
I've
minimized my interaction with the political scene. Mm-hmm. I write about martial arts, some self-empowerment. You know, occasionally I'll write about this stuff. So I'm just trying to, you know, make the most I can out of what I have control over. I don't get it. I mean, you know, and what's ironic is that the big conservative media is very short on stories of genuine victories. I mean, the conservative media, the fuel for conservative media, right? That which drives it are overwhelmingly just accounts of outrages and double standards mm-hmm. by the left. But all you're doing is reinforcing the rest of us what exactly. we already suspect, and that is
exactly.
side is a losing side.
And it's whataboutism. There's no, as you direct people, let's look at the meta. It's all whatabout. What if they did this? We did this. It's just on the level of grubby whataboutism. There's no transcendent thinking. I want David to come in, but one thing just to stick with, because our viewers are going to say exactly, they're going to say, what are your solutions? You have all the critique nailed perfectly. And you say just get involved in life, but I think there's more to it. And I, maybe as an immigrant who is very much alone, who left communities behind, maybe that's where I'm. In fact, we didn't vote for 20 years living in the country because of my opposition to Uncle Sam. We didn't take citizenship.
I remember that.
We were legal permanent residents, high paying taxes until I saw Trump and my parrot saw Trump and we all fell in love. Mm-hmm. And we all naturalized, including the parrot. He used to watch the rallies, but what I naturalized after 20 years. But the solution, Jack, other than self, I just find that when I say to people, we have to congregate into like-minded communities, start acting more in the Burkean little platoon. I just say, oh, I've got my family. You rot, you immigrant.
No, No. I like that idea too. You know,
How do we do that? It's a huge country. How do we do that? We need to do that.
From what I understand, you know, kind of informally, there's already something. There's indications that something like that is underway already.
Yep.
And I think certain patterns really started to kind of solidify over the last couple years. You know, during the COVID internment, you know, you saw things got really restrictive, oppressive in the blue states, Democrat-controlled states. And so you saw people moving from these states, states like in the Northeast, for example, heading south or heading out west. I think my state, New Jersey, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is the number one state in the union that you know, when you're considering the number of people who are leaving it, like this mass exodus of residents from New Jersey. So, you know, you do see some indications that people are starting to think along those lines, and maybe people in greater numbers than you'd be able to gather from, you know, from anything you could read.
Yes, I hope
this is happening. You know, people are leaving the crime. The crime in the cities, in the states, states like this are blue states, high taxes. You know, so all this stuff is starting to, I think, gel a little bit.
Yeah, although like you hear about people leaving California, for example,
right.
And all they do is they take all their horrible ideologies and everything with them.
It's true.
They pollute the next place they go to as well.
Idaho is big on the pollution. You know, they're targeting Idaho, for example, is a great place. California is just destroying Boise.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, but the thing is that, and I agree as well, Jack, that during COVID, there has been a sort of realignment, inner realizations. We found it over here in Europe, for example, in the UK and Ireland, places like that. Groups of people who might have been former political adversaries suddenly started to come together and say, no, we're not playing the conquer and divide game anymore. We're not doing that, right? We value our freedom, our liberty, much more important. We want to be left alone, get away from us. And we had to do that because otherwise we would have been crushed under the terror of the COVID fascism. So, so that happened here. And I thought it's been a good thing. And I think that there's been something like that in the US as well. But I wanted to share this chart with both of you folks here, because I think this speaks to another. It's an unspoken dynamic, but it's a horrific dynamic when you actually look at it, and specifically with regard to the States. Jed, can we just bring up a slide here? This, and actually it's Elon Musk. Elon Musk pointing out something which should be devastating for anyone with a brain to work out. And that is that, as you can see there from, I guess, the end of the 70s, the fertility rate in the US is way below replacement level. In other words, you know, if demography is the future, and it is, it really is, you're screwed. It's just no other way of looking at it.
No, it's not.
You know, look at that, Alana. Look how it's slumped.
No, I'm not. Let's hear what Jack. I'm not the demography. I think, so what if you don't want to have children? You shouldn't be flooded with illegal immigrants. You shouldn't be replaced. You have the right to any sort of, familial dispensation. And besides, abortion, absolutely a horrible business, but let the progressives scrape out their wounds. Why do you care?
but the point is, but just on a simple, surely
babies, I can't anymore. But the
on a well, I mean, I'm long past the point where I was interested in having any myself. But all I'm saying is that a nation that has a demographic like that is going to crash and burn over the next 30, 40 years. But that's not happening in the US because your population's increasing. Why is that? And that's the key question, surely, Jack, because you're not a nation. I put it to you. You're not a nation anymore. You're a landmass. You don't enforce your borders. You've got, you know, no interest in enforcing the orders, the borders. Therefore, you're being conquered, and it is the end of empire. And that's why radical solutions will have to be happen, like secession, which I know. One of my friends interviewed, I think, a Texas governor or whatever, someone from Texas anyway, and they were talking about they want to secede. They want to get out the hell out of the union, right? So maybe that is the way. Maybe and retain something that's worth retaining.
Yeah.
No, I think that's ultimately probably the way it's going to go down. I'm not sure when, but you know, secession is the basis on which this country was founded. I know doesn't figure very prominently in the contemporary rhetoric over, you know, how America came to be, but it is. America was grounded in secession, right? Peaceful separation. That's all the early Americans wanted, or at least the Americans from the founding generation wanted. And when that attempt to secede was met with resistance, it's only then that war occurred. But secession itself is like divorce. You know, rather than have two spouses remain together in a violent relationship, it's best that peaceful exit remain available to them.
Yeah.
So I think that's ultimately the way this is going to have to flesh out.
And to pick up on David's point that we are a Walmart with missiles. We're not a nation, a landmass, or a Walmart with missiles. But secession, because you can form those little platoons,
right?
Burkean platoons. Yeah. Reform them on a smaller scale.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think that's a good consensual note to perhaps bring. Unless Alana, you've got any other questions?
Yes, thank you. Last time you shut me down. The part. I just wanted to bring up one more thing, David, and that's the partisan talking points. I want you to just put it within the matrix. What is this mesmerizing, the left this, abortion that, socialism, communism, China, Iran, there's this Hunter Biden, as that New Zealand or Australian woman keeps, I'm sick of the laptop, the lap dance, whatever. The talking points, they're just, that's something that makes me so mad. And for instance, you saw the same thing enacted in the selection of the, in the screening of the Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown, when all these people went on about his child pornography, she refused to execute some young man who looked at very horrible things online. He looked at very horrible things online, and that's all the Republicans and their talking points had against the Supreme Court justice. Not one word about the pornography of lockdowns, the pornography of, I got kicked out of a doctor's office, a private doctor's office, because I wouldn't divulge my vaccine, my anti-vax, my unvax status. Children are still not being allowed into schools. So the talking points, how do they play into the matrix?
Yeah, well, so those are all talking points. And I, in that paragraph, I mentioned the Trump mystique. So I think what I was saying there is that there's still this idea that dies hard amongst, you know, Trump supporters that he deserves credit for everything that's regarded as good, but he deserves blame for nothing. That it was always, you know, he tried, but it was others that stopped him. You know, Trump's always playing what, fifth dimensional chess, right?
Yeah. You say that, yeah.
That's the idea that really, you know, that really persists. These other talking points to which Alon is referring, you know, the one you mentioned, your own unvaccinated status. You know what you hear now, or at least you started hearing more of this after the base started making a lot of noise about the mandates. You'll hear Republicans and, you know, big conservative influencers say never critique the vaccine.
No.
I mean, nothing. Even though the vaccine adverse event reporting system of the CDC, you know, just and of to which maybe 1 to 10% top of people who have been vaccinated even bother reporting, you know, has just this ton of adverse effects and deaths following back. They'll never critique the vaccine. They'll all insist that they are vaccinated.
Yes.
But they just oppose mandates. And you also hear them say, well, if a private employer, you know, or a private company wants to discriminate against people who haven't been vaccinated, well, that's the market, right?
Jack, but what about the baker who wants to, my property, I don't want to cater. Never mention that. They're very vocal about the baker. Yep. Shouldn't have to cater to a gay wedding. But a business having to civil rights law, you know.
Well, that's why I say that to all. So I would suggest that, you know, Hewitt is one. You probably know, probably heard of him, right? Salem Broadcasting. Hewitt, I remember hearing him some months ago saying, you know, he's very much a champion of the vaccines. He's opposed to mandates, but he does think that because he's a believer in the free market, that private employers and business people ought to have a right to discriminate against those who are not vaccinated. I would say to people like Hewitt, we should just say that these are the people who also support, say, discriminating against blacks, right? Even though they don't explicitly say that, and they know it's bad politics to even be accused of that, right? We should say, okay, so if you're in favor of private market actors discriminating against others on the basis of whether they're vaccinated, then in principle, you're in favor of them discriminating against anyone for whatever reasons, because you're a believer in the market, right? Again, they don't follow the logic of their own reasoning because they don't move beyond the talking points.
Jack, my point is, and I want to ask you about this. That ship has sailed, and as a libertarian who's with Goldwater in the 1960s when he refused to the civil rights law based on this precise principle you just articulated, private property rights, it would absolutely sunder private property rights. But we have a civil rights law. It's applied every day against small business, Christian business.
That's right. Yeah.
Let the fucking Republicans apply it for us.
Right. That's right. Yep.
That ship sailed. We have it.
They have, as far as I'm concerned, and I remain convinced of this, until and unless Republicans demonstrate what they plan on doing and how they plan on making sure that Anthony Fauci receives the treatment that he deserves, until and unless they're willing to do something about the travesty of the COVID internment that people around the world have been made to endure over those last couple of years, I don't want to hear shit about anything else, because that's not just one issue amongst other issues. I mean, think about this.
If
we must vote for Republicans in order to keep the country from being lost, then why is it that for the last 2 years you'd swear there was no Republican Party if the Republican Party is really the party of the Constitution, the party of liberty? For two fucking years, you had, you know, people locked down in their homes. You know, you had all these restrictions, and it's still going on in varying degrees.
And Jack, the hundreds of thousands of people who have lost livelihoods.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's, listen, there's damage of every conceivable type. You're talking
all of it damaged. You and I spoke a lot during that. We were shocked. We were damaged. We were reeling. We're all a little damaged socially.
Tens of millions of people lost their jobs overnight. Right. What was, you know, hundreds of thousands of business owners, particularly small business owners, had to shut their doors forever. You're talking about the psychological damage that's been done, especially to kids. You know, these masks that are useless. The masks that have psychological effects, you know, that have this deleterious social impact.
There has to be a reckoning,
and I hear
nothing
talking about. I mean, Rand Paul can recommend that Fauci be brought up on charges for having lied about gain of function research. See, to me, even if that's true, going at Fauci along those lines only reinforces COVID orthodoxy. Because you're still implying that this is some uniquely dangerous disease that just
escaped
from this lab. It sounds like a Hollywood film. No, what you need to do is to point out the fact that all this testing that's been done has, by and large, been bogus. I mean, you could find Fauci-friendly sources like the New York Times, for example, that acknowledge that up to 90% of all PCR tests were probably false positive. You have Fauci on a Little Herd podcast during the summer of 2020, I think, who acknowledged that if the cycles of the PCR are run beyond a certain threshold, if they're run at 35 or a higher number of thresholds, what the CDC was recommending, it's a false positive. So you have millions and millions of cases that are basically test results that are basically worthless. No one's talking about that in the big con media. No one has ever talked about that.
I think the other thing to say is that for me, one of the most depressing things was the father of Operation Warp Speed.
Is who? Yeah, who?
Donald Trump. And Donald Trump still continues to take
credit for that.
He takes credit for it, even though it pisses off quite a bit of the base, because they talk to me. But they are prepared to forgive him everything. That's the problem, Jack. And that's where, you know, I think, you know, a lot of what you write in that column, it is on the button. He will be, I believe, the candidate in 2024. I have no idea what's going to happen.
He will
at this point in the game. But Alana,
I think that's a mistake. I think that's a big mistake.
DeSantis would be quite, he might be solid, DeSantis.
Yes. No, I think DeSantis seems more solid. See, remember, Trump is a carnival barker of a sort. I mean, he is a celebrity, right? He is kind of he's just this larger-than-life figure, but he is, he's toxic. And by toxic, I mean, not that he isn't, as I said in that article, infinitely preferable in a lot of ways in the abstract to what we have now. But we're not dealing with the idea. We're not dealing with the abstract. We're dealing with context. And within the context of a second Trump presidency, that's going to galvanize the left.
Stand those children of his again, for heaven's sakes. I mean,
Right, Alana, have we, are we questions?
You've given me all my time, my dear. I have no
idea. No. Right. We have a final clip, and we're going to play out on the final clip.
End of that. Thank you, Jack. It was wonderful seeing you.
Thank you.
Jack, thank you so much for being here. Really enjoyed the chat. Great to talk these issues through. And
thanks.
So we'll play out in this clip, and we'll see everyone again real soon. So
appreciate it. Thank you.
Cheers, Jack.
They've gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you.